This is ProBlogger.
Hi there and welcome to episode 181 of the ProBlogger podcast. My name's Darren Rouse and I'm the blogger behind ProBlogger.com, a blog, a podcast, event, job board and a series of ebooks all designed to help you as a blogger to start an amazing blog, beautifully designed, and to create amazing content for it and to grow that audience that you've been dreaming of and to hopefully make some money from your blog as well. You can learn more about ProBlogger at ProBlogger.com. Now, in today's episode, I have a real treat for those of you who, if you're like me, spend most of your time working alone as a solo entrepreneur. Now, I do have a small team who works with me, but I spend most of my day by myself. And I'm not the only one. Over in the ProBlogger podcast listeners Facebook group this week, I ran a little poll to see how many of you as listeners work alone versus working in teams. And the result was as I suspected. 93% of you work alone on your blogs. You don't employ anyone, you don't have anyone volunteering to help you in your blogging. Of the other 7%, most of you said that you had a family member or a reader volunteer their time, or someone virtually offering their time, so in another part of the world. And of that 7%, most of you say you do spend most of your time alone as a solo entrepreneur, even though you do have other people involved in the business. Now, this figure of 93%, or it's probably 100% really, is no surprise to me at all, because every time we serve our readers, we find the same thing, and we get a lot of questions from you as readers and listeners of the podcast asking us about your biggest challenges as a blogger. And most of the challenges that we see are less about blogging and more about being a solo entrepreneur. We get a lot of questions about productivity and how to stay focused and how to deal with being overwhelmed and how to know what to spend your time on. And these are challenges that many of us face because we're working alone. As a result, for today's episode, I asked Robert Gerrish to join me. Now, Robert is a coach, he's a teacher, he's a community leader who has a passion for solo business owners. He's the owner of an amazing site here in Australia called Flying Solo. You can find it at flyingsolo.com.au. It's got over 100,000 members and they're almost all solo business owners. And he's been doing that for many years now. And he's also recently launched a really great course for people around the world called Soloism, and we'll talk a little bit about that later in the episode. Now, I chatted with Robert earlier today and I asked him about some of those big challenges that I see you as our community having as a solo entrepreneurs. We talk about productivity, we talk about focus, we talk about loneliness, we talk about personal development, how to stay motivated, how to deal with feeling overwhelmed, and how to get through those times where there's rejection or a failure. He also gives us some really useful tools and apps that solo business owners will find useful. So if you're a solo entrepreneur or you want to be, you're making a transition to be, you're going to relate to a lot of what we talk about in this episode. I personally came away from this chat feeling very motivated and inspired, and I hope you do too. Now, you can find today's show notes over at ProBlogger.com/podcast/181, where there's a full transcript of today's show. And you'll also find on the show notes today a link that Robert has given us that gives you 20% off his Soloism course. We'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the show. But you're going to get a lot of value whether you look at that or not, because this episode is packed with value. I hope you enjoy this interview with Robert.
Creating great content, finding an audience, building engagement, monetizing your blog. This is ProBlogger.
Hi, Robert. How are you today?
Oh, look, I'm very well, Darren. Great to be talking with you.
It's great to be chatting with you as well. I sometimes when I think about interviewing you, I don't know quite where to go with this because there's so much we could talk about. You've got a great story and your site Flying Solo is one that I would love to interview you about. But today I want to kind of talk about soloism and being a solo entrepreneur. But I wonder, just to give our audience a bit of a context into who you are and why you are talking to us on this topic today, whether you could talk to us a little bit about why you're passionate about solo entrepreneurs and maybe give us a 2-minute backstory of getting into that industry yourself.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, I started Flying Solo about 20 years ago now, which is just flown by. I can't believe it's that long. And in a kind of, to give you a short version, my sort of background prior to that was on the other side of the world in London. I was working for a small sort of independent marketing consultancy. We sold that business to Saatchi & Saatchi in the late 80s. And I then decided, you know, with a bit more cash than I knew what to do with, just not sure what to do next, that I'd take a year off and travel the world. So wasn't I lucky? And I did. And thank goodness I ended up in Australia. And thank goodness I met my now wife and have relocated totally here. Now, the reason I'm telling you all that is when I came here, I decided that after a reasonably sort of full-on career in London, I really wanted to kind of do my own thing. And I'd heard all these lovely stories about life in Australia. So I decided, yes, okay, I was going to start a business. I was going to keep it very sort of under control, very manageable. Jane and myself, we wanted to start a family. So I knew I wanted a real sort of lifestyle business. So I set about doing that and ended up getting a little too busy. And one of the main reasons I got too busy was that I started working with small creative groups, because that was the kind of background that I had. So small creative companies, helping them with their positioning and marketing. And through a delightful twist of fate, I was introduced to this whole world of coaching that was just starting. This was about 1998, 99. And so I looked at that and I thought, well, actually, this is a really good way to deliver my skills rather than consulting, where you kind of come back to your office and do all the work. Coaching was very much more you'd support the individual to find the solutions themselves and you'd nudge them and guide them. So I was really attracted to that, and that suited my sort of lifestyle business idea perfectly. And at about that time, ABC Four Corners was doing a show on new work practices. And delightfully, they chose me as their guinea pig. So I suddenly had an office, which in fact was my garden shed, with a TV crew in it. They followed some of my clients around. And over a very short period of time, my business just went nuts. You know, I had this fantastic national TV profile. My phone was ringing off the hook. I was so busy. But I suddenly found myself back in that situation where I was doing too much, and that's not what I wanted. So I sort of sat down one day with all the files of everyone I'd ever talked to and worked out who were the people I really wanted to work with, who are the people that I really sensed I was kind of doing good work with. And lo and behold, they were all people that were working totally by themselves, just like me, trying to build a nice lifestyle business, something that allowed them to live and work the way they wanted to. So with my sort of marketing brain, I thought, aha, I'm onto something here. So I registered flying solo. I started writing just about solo businesses, working by yourself. Very quickly, the Daily Telegraph asked me if I'd write a regular column. Alan and Unwin asked me if I'd write a book. It all just took off. And it's always been since then, and to this day, is what drives me is wanting to support people who want to create their own business. Now, if they want to scale and grow it into something much larger, fine. But the heartland of our community, I would say, are those that want to work on their own terms, want freedom, want fulfillment, want to do work that inspires them and does some good. And that's what we do now. And you know, in Australia, and the same as US and UK, there's well over 70% of small businesses these days are one-person businesses. And I think some of the challenges we have are very unique. And that's what, you know, that's why we exist.
That's great. It's exactly why I wanted to focus on soloism today, because our audience, every time we survey them, and we survey them several times a year, the challenges in our community seem to be less about how do I blog and more about how do I have a business and sustain it as a single person, or, you know, maybe someone who's contracting out and it's not a traditional business model, I guess, in many ways. And so many of the questions that we get are more around productivity and focus and feeling overwhelmed and lacking motivation and feeling lonely. So today I wonder whether we can sort of tap into some of those themes. But before I get into those challenges, I wonder whether some people just aren't cut out to be a solo operator, and whether you can identify some characteristics that good solo operators might have, or, you know, I guess help to make that decision whether it's right for them.
Yeah, well, look, I certainly it pains me to say it, but I do agree. It does not suit everybody, and particularly those that have maybe come from perhaps the big end of town, from corporate, from an employed position, where they're used to having kind of structure thrust upon them. They have reporting procedures and action lists that are determined by other people. You know, sometimes when you're shifting from that to being the master of your own destiny, control of your own time in business, it doesn't sit with everybody. But I do think that so many of the things that can bring about change and can help people really enjoy it are very learnable skills. You know, this is not rocket science, or else there wouldn't be 70% of our business community working like this. You know, I think it's something like one in three houses in most residential streets in Australia, certainly, you've got a home-based business in them. So, you know, a lot of people are doing it. But I think, yeah, we need an ability to be able to juggle projects. We need to be able to have real clarity around what our priorities are. And I think that's a key one that we might pull apart a bit further. We need to be, you know, self-starters. We need to be disciplined. We need to be willing to learn, and putting our own sort of professional development at the top of our list, which is often something that can, you know, not be on the top of the list. We've got to be able to communicate well. We need to be able to market. You know, we need to be hold ourselves accountable. I mean, the list is, there's a lot of stuff there. We actually have a quiz that I'm very happy if anybody wants to have a look at it. It's at flyingsolo.com.au/quiz, where we kind of pull this really apart as what are some kind of the skills that you need. But I do think that that we can, you know, we can certainly learn these things, and we can take steps forward and start to bring some structure. But it's, yeah, it takes work. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think it takes time getting used to as well. And, you know, I actually had a conversation with someone recently that they didn't think they had what it took to be at home all day alone. And I think you're right. Some of those skills and characteristics develop over time, but you don't have to confront them all on day one either.
No, that's very true. And look, and also, you know, the way that that we can run our businesses now has changed so dramatically, even in the last sort of 10 years. You know, we have, and when you mentioned there about working alone, and certainly working alone at home doesn't work for everyone. It's, you know, you can't bounce ideas off your household pets. You can sort of get distracted when you walk out of your office and see a day's washing sitting there. You know, but there are things we can do about that. We can move around. We don't, you know, I think the important thing is to focus on what we can do, you know, what we should do. If anyone's just standing at home or sitting at home now feeling a little lost, you know, the thing I would say is, well, don't sit around at home. Just get out into the world. You know, don't sit there laboring over something, because ideas don't come when you're kind of bashing your head on your monitor. You know, it doesn't work like that.
That's right. Well, that kind of leads me to my next question is, you know, we hear a lot of our audience are working off the kitchen table, surrounded by the life of home, or they're working after work in a real job, they often call it, and lots of distractions. Is there any tips that you can give us around the work environment and how to set up your work environment if you are struggling with all those distractions and other agendas, I guess?
Yeah, well, look, certainly, and I think, you know, you kind of touched on it, the very first point, which where you said someone's just kind of working at their kitchen table. Now, if that works for you, fine. But in my experience of these things, what we really need to do is we need to show ourselves that we're taking our work seriously. And I've lost count of how many people I speak to, spoken to over the years, and I've said, you know, are struggling a bit with perhaps concentration and focus on the business. I said, okay, just describe for me where you're working right now. What do you see around you? And it astonishes me how many people use the kind of the third bedroom, you know, the one with the half-assembled IKEA furniture and kids' bikes and all this sort of stuff. And they huddle themselves in the corner somewhere, or they sit in the kitchen, or they sit in their bedroom. And really, this is sending, I think, fairly deep signals to our sort of inner selves that this isn't a real business. You know, this is just something I'm going to do on the kitchen table whilst I've got a bit of time. You know, and so we need to give ourselves the best possible shot at this. So I would say give yourself the best space in your home. You know, in many cases, people's the nicest room is their bedroom where they walk in every night and shut their eyes and go to sleep for 10 hours, 8 hours, whatever. You know, give yourself the best possible space. Make it the most supportive space. If it's important to you that it looks like a proper office, well, paint it like a proper office. Furnish it like a proper office. You know, anything that sends signals to you that, okay, here I am, I'm going to work. You know, that's what we need to do. Whereas if we're sitting down in our PJs and we're just kind of doing it around normal sort of daily family life, then I think we're setting ourselves up for a bit of a tricky time. So create the right space. Have your desk space, I would suggest you, nice and clear, and the things that are on your desk and the things that are your priorities. Anything else, get it out of your vision. Move it away from you. You know, have a decent chair, have a decent desk, have a decent light, get the best computer you can afford. You know, give yourselves the best chance of this. Because if you're in employment and somebody said, yeah, go and sit over there in that corner where there's no light on that horrible old chair and that manky old desk, you know, you wouldn't stay there for very long. And yet we do it to ourselves. It's crazy.
You're listening to Pro Blogger.
I think a lot of it is mindset, really. And I know of one friend who wears a tie to his front room every day just to help him to get into work zone and to focus professionally upon what he's doing.
Yeah, and look, and I have a similar story of a woman who leaves her house, walks around the block and comes back in again, you know, and that's a great thing. But I you know, there's a lovely quote from the Dalai Lama which says, I've got so much work to do today, I'm going to have to meditate for twice as long. And I think that's just the most wonderful saying. And the sentiment of that is, if you're busy and you're overwhelmed, often the best thing you can do is actually just take yourself away, give yourself a chance to clear your head, work out what your priorities are, and then come back into your day with some vigor. You know, if we're just walking, getting shunting the kids out to school, walking into an office and boff, you know, immediately feeling overwhelmed with what we've got to do, that's never going to work.
Yeah, I think think back to when I used to work in a shop selling stationery. I used to enjoy the commute, and I think that commute gave me some separation from the rest of my life and helped me to get ready for work. And I miss that commute today, and so often we'll go for a walk or grab a coffee and get to work after I've had a break.
Yeah, the story I often talk with people is just imagine you're going on holiday, you're going for like a 2-week holiday or something. What usually happens before you go on holiday is you clear everything up, you empty your inbox, you tidy your office, you tidy up loose ends, and then you go off and you enjoy your holiday. And then when you come back that first day back, sometimes you might not want to be back, but what you've got is a workplace that's ready for you. And what we shouldn't be doing is waiting for our sort of annual holidays to do this kind of stuff. You know, ideally, we should do the sort of rituals that you talk about. And when you end your day, make sure you're leaving your space ready for your next day. You know, give yourself the best chance to work at your best.
That's great. So we're really getting in there to talking about some of the rhythms of work. And, you know, I think, you know, leaving your work so that you're ready for the next day starts to speak to a system of time management almost, you know, planning and that type of thing. Do you have any other tips around managing your time?
Yeah, look, if there's a few things there, and I'll just kind of sort of jump around a little bit and go back a step. When I was doing a lot of sort of one-on-one coaching with people, and I would meet people who are or were in a position where they were really kind of struggling and overwhelmed and just feeling sort of anxious about their work. And one of the opening questions that I would ask is, where do you get your energy from? And in most cases, people would respond in that situation saying, well, I haven't got any energy. You know, that's why I'm talking to you. So I say, okay, well, let's have a look at when you did have good levels of energy. Describe life then. And if you do that sort of exercise, you'll find that what people are saying is, oh, when I had energy, I used to catch up with my mates twice a week. I'd play soccer at the weekends. I'd go out with my partner once a fortnight. I'd go for a run every morning. I'd go to the gym twice a week. You know, all these things that little by little, when we've when the pressure is on, if we're not careful, we let go of these things one by one because we have this crazy thought that because I've got so much work, I've got to stay here in front of my computer, you know, which is just lunacy. We've got to put ourselves first, give ourselves our own sort of, put ourselves as a priority, treat ourselves like our best customer. You know, so if it's, you mentioned going for a walk there, I love walking. Now, if I don't go for a decent walk every day, I'm not a nice guy. You know, when my son gets home from school, my wife gets home, I'm not the nicest person to be around. But if I go for a decent walk, I get clarity. I get some distance between my work and the rest of my life. You know, so that's not really a tool, but it's certainly something I think we need to do. We're very strong advocates at Flying Solo and have been for a number of years over the Pomodoro technique, which I'm sure you and your listeners will have heard of. But this whole notion of working in sort of 20-minute blocks, of having it's called the Pomodoro technique. It was invented by this Italian guy who used one of his little Italian tomato kitchen timers. And you work for 20 minutes on a topic and then you take a 5-minute break. Now, that's a little tool. If anybody Googles that, there's lots of guides, there's apps you can use on your phone as well. I think the notion of working in blocks of time, being really clear what you're going to do for the next 20 minutes and looking at a project and going, okay, that project's going to take me 3 lots of Pomodoros. So kind of having it planned. Now, this might sound quite structured to some people, and a lot of creative people don't actually love a lot of structure, but I would just say to you, please, please try it, because it opens up so much more sort of possibility into what you can achieve in a day. So I would certainly have a look at blocking time, using blocks for, you know, for key periods. I'd also, something that's always worked well for me is having daily themes. So for a while in my coaching business, Wednesday was my business development day. And all I did on Wednesday were activities to do with attracting, growing business through promotion and marketing. So what the result that had on the rest of my week is whenever I had any other ideas or anything that I observed or anything I thought about, that all go in my diary for Wednesday. That's Wednesday. I'll do that on Wednesday. I won't worry about that now. But again, what I think happens with a lot of us in solo businesses is there are so many things coming at us all the time that we feel we have to respond to them kind of in real time. And that just destroys any sense of focus. So using blocks, perhaps blocking a whole day, giving a day a theme, those are some of the things that certainly they work for me, and I've seen them work for a lot of other people.
It's fascinating you say that, because regular readers or listeners of this will have heard me talk numerous times about my own weekly schedule, and I kind of have a template for my week where I block out half a day for, you know, creating content and half a day for, you know, different activities. And I find that particularly works well for me. I try and leave some freedom in there and some impulsivity in the midst of the day, because I think that's important for my personality type. But I do think blocks of time work well.
I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, if we don't allow some time to be impulsive, then, you know, really, where's this freedom that we're all, yes, you know, that we're all after? So true. I think we should do that. But freedom comes when you can enjoy freedom when you get a sense that you've actually achieved something. You know, for anyone who's having one of those really clunky sort of days where they're just in and out of email or Facebook and not doing anything, if you say to that person, okay, now it's your yoga class, the chances are they go, well, I don't feel like I've deserved that. I haven't done enough. I haven't achieved enough. You know, but if you actually do these things in these blocks, then you do feel that you've achieved it. And that's the whole thing, is we've got to, you know, there's no one else coming along and patting us on our back when we work on our own, saying good job or bad job or anything like that. We've got to do it ourselves. So I think, and I talk to my son a lot about this when he's doing his homework now, he's just started in the sort of HSC run-up, is, you know, his tendency is he wants to go and skateboard or he wants to go and hit a ball against the wall. And I'll always say, well, look, come on, just do eat the frog first, do the Brian Tracy thing, do the work first, and then celebrate by going and having a bit of fun. And just doing that switch is just so key, I think.
Creating great content and building your audience. This is ProBlogger.
So one of the other themes that we hear from a lot of our audience is the feeling of overwhelm. Sometimes you... And it comes for different reasons. Sometimes it's just there's a lot of pressure on, and other times it's there's so much choice. You know, how do I know what to focus on? Or, you know, there's so many opportunities, and particularly as bloggers in the social media space, you know, do I focus on Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat or blogging itself or podcasting? And it can be an overwhelming space to be involved in. Is there any tips you'd give us on doing that? Because we do have to do it all ourselves. We're the only ones who can get it done. Is there any way to sort of make smart choices around, you know, what to focus our time on and to deal with those feelings of overwhelm?
Yeah, gosh. I mean, that is such a big one. You know, we research our audience every couple of years, and overwhelm is kind of second to finding enough clients and having enough revenue, and it's just always there. And I think, a large part of it, was it Paul Theroux who said that lovely quote, "The world moves aside for the man who knows where he's going," or words to that effect anyway. And I still think of that. I think it comes back to, we need to have real clarity over what we're actually trying to achieve and where we're trying to get to. And that's so basic. And, you know, you'll have heard that said a million times. But I do think that at the core of overwhelm is a lack of or a slight sort of hesitation in, is this the right thing? Should I be doing this? Now, when you're really clear on what you want to do and where you need to go and what your priorities are for your day, it's much easier to go, yeah, well, maybe that is a nice, bright, shiny thing over there, but is it going to take me where I'm trying to go now? Answer, no, it probably isn't, so I won't look at it now. You know, and it's so part of it is doing that. Now, that doesn't really answer your question, because the examples that you use there are all ways, or the number of them are ways that a blogger can market. And of course, any blogger is looking to grow their market, and they're going to look at all sorts of opportunities. But the main thing there, I think, is, again, it comes back to that kind of blocking idea, is, okay, if looking at new avenues is something to do, then have that being maybe one of your themes. That's one day a week or one day a fortnight where that's all you do. You bury yourself into it rather than being distracted at the new shiny things that are popping up here and there. And they're always going to be popping up here and there. Is compartmentalize them. Put them down. That's your day of research to look at those things. Speak to a couple of people. Get other people's opinions. Don't, you know, no one needs to reinvent the wheel these days. And it's not, I think too many people worry about trying to be sort of early adopters, trying to get on things fast, getting on things first. I'm more of a sort of kind of get rich slowly kind of person. if indeed I ever get rich. There's no hurry here. There is no hurry. And I think the important thing is to step back a bit and observe and listen and look and don't get swept up in that. Now, whether that's a tangible enough response to your question is questionable. But the other thing I would say is, overwhelm can be eased dramatically when we get things down on paper. When we're walking around with stuff in our heads, it's a really busy place. It's like, you know, starting your computer and launching every single piece of software and then expecting everything to move smoothly. It doesn't. So ideally what we should do is get this stuff out of our heads, get it down on paper, just write it down. If you're getting overwhelmed by something, write down your thoughts. What is it you're getting overwhelmed about? Is it right that you should be thinking about this now? Just going through that process, almost like a sort of morning pages, you know, that you'll be familiar with the artist's way. Getting stuff out of your head, down on paper, is such a strong way of clearing some of that overwhelm. Another good way is to buddy up with someone. Speak to a friend or a colleague. Speaking to people is, you know, we don't do enough of that. Talk to somebody maybe who's in a similar situation, maybe catch up with them once or twice a week. Talk on a forum. You know, our forums are full of people that are sort of sharing the things that are overwhelming them. And, you know, you will know, any of your listeners will know, the joy you feel, the ease you feel when you share a situation, a problem with somebody else. Even if they, you know, even if you share it with someone who doesn't even speak your language, the chances are they just nod a few times. You'll come away feeling a bit better.
Yeah, I think putting words to it really is powerful. Because often when we have those thoughts locked in our minds, they become bigger, and they don't need to become, you know, as big as we build them up in our minds. And sometimes just speaking them or writing them down, as you suggest, I think can put you back in control again and give you perspective.
Totally. I don't know if you've, I'm sure you probably have, but you've, you know, if you've done any sort of study of cognitive behavior therapy, you know, this, it sounds very technical, but it is basically, you know, my understanding of it, and I've done just a short course in it, is it's a means by which you kind of write down what's on your mind. You then write in a kind of column next to it, well, what am I really worried about here? What are the issues that really concern me? And then in a third column, what's the alternative? How might things actually play out? And just by kind of pulling something apart like that, particularly for anyone that has recurring concerns, you know, if they're forever waking up at 2 a.m. with the same sort of problems in their mind, and 2 a.m. or thereabouts is never a good time to get, you know, to get clear. But if you've got a sheet of paper, and I did this for a while when we had some sort of pressures in our business a few years ago, and I wrote down, I did this kind of three column thing. I think, okay, this is what I'm worrying about. This is it explained a little bit further. But this is actually what it really kind of means. This is what could really happen. This is an alternative way of looking at it. And I just kept that by my bedside. And my goodness, it was helpful. Just knowing it, say, you can wake up, you can see it, you can worry, you can look at it and go, you know what? That doesn't deserve worrying about. That's just crazy.
Yeah. No, that's, you know, great. My, it sounds like you did that like I do with my wife, with Vanessa. I'm like, often she doesn't understand the complexities of what I'm worried about, but simply by putting them out there, she's able to ask a couple of questions and you suddenly like, yeah, okay, I don't need to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I agree with that. I think our wives are similar. And it's incredible. It doesn't need to be somebody who has a deep insight into the sort of machinations of your business. But it's the process of talking, verbalizing it, actually will help you, will help the individual just see often the absurdity of the worry, but also start to see a hint at some of the solutions and the alternative ways of looking at things. There's always different ways to look at things. And when we're on our own, you know, kind of hemmed in a bit, we fail to remember that, I think.
How to build and monetize your blog. This is ProBlogger.
One of the things that we're sort of talking about here is our worry of if things don't go well, and many times things do go well and we don't need to worry about those things. But what about when things don't go well? Do you have any suggestions there? Because, you know, sometimes things rock our world. We might go through a time of rejection or failure or, you know, something just doesn't work. And it can be really hard for, as a solo entrepreneur, to get over those hurdles because we don't have someone alongside of us going, you know, let's keep going. And, you know, often when you're working in a team environment, one person's up while the other person's down. But if you're down and you've had some sort of rejection, how do you get back up on the horse and keep going?
Yeah, well, that's a great point. And yes, of course it happens. But I mean, if we think of our kids, those of us who have kids, you know, when they're starting to walk or they're starting to talk, what do they do? They kind of fall over, but they don't just sit there in a heap. They get up and they do it again. And I'm not, you know, that's nowhere near enough of a kind of a solution. But it's worth remembering that as human beings, this is how we're built. You know, this is innate. This is within us. Things are going to fail, but we do have the skills within us, we have the resolve and the drive within us to get up and try it again. But the thing I think that often we don't do enough of is just recognizing the real kind of learning and the wins even within failure. And what I mean by that is, if you think of those poor people who, well, maybe it's hard to sympathize with them, but those people who kind of ring up your family home at 6 o'clock at night, you know, cold calling, canvassing, trying to flog you something. You know, now that's a really grueling job to do. It's a horrible job. And most of the time they're met with failure. And they're usually a lot worse than just failure. They get abuse and everything else. Now, how on earth do they sit there and dial the next number? Well, the reason I think that they do that, and there's been some research into this, is that their measurement of success is very much taken in very small steps. So the fact that you pick the phone up in the first place is a win. The next thing that you actually say something, even if it's mildly abusive, is a win. They take the wins along the way. And I think as business owners, we don't do enough of that. We look at something and it's too easy to say, well, that didn't work. But, you know, what was it Thomas Edison said? He's you know, he doesn't think he's failed. He's just found 10,000 ways it didn't work. You know, and I think the same is true in business. We need to look at what we're doing going, okay, that didn't go the way I wanted it to go. However, what have I learnt about that? What can I take out of it that I can reapply? And if we start to use that sort of mindset, my goodness, it's going to open up new possibilities and new levels of strength within us. Because if we do just fall over in a heap every time, you know, it's not going to work. You know, we're not going to be able to kind of carry on doing that. So, you know, there was a survey done, I think it was the Productivity Commission here in Australia, it spoke to a number of startup failures. And to a woman and a man, every single person who'd failed, this is sometime after they shut the door, considered the failure to have been a positive thing. Now, that's a very hard thing to sort of get your head around when you're in the middle of it. But they all look back and it's saying, well, actually, if that hadn't kind of happened, then I wouldn't have learned this. I wouldn't have known this. I wouldn't have gone here. I wouldn't have met that person. And I think that's an important thing just to remind ourselves that there are always lessons in here. So we need to step back and go, okay, well, that didn't work. But what have I learned from it? And how can I amend it and change it and transition and try again? Because once we do master that, my goodness, it's a tricky one. But once we do, we'll never have the problem again.
That's right. The rejections and the failures are an elimination of a course of action that you won't take again, and narrows down the chance of victory. I was talking to one blogger the other day, and she was like, she'd been really quite depressed about her blog and have been dwelling on the fact that nobody's reading and nobody's commenting and nobody's following and no one's subscribing. And then she managed to turn it around by focusing upon the fact that, well, 30 people read today. And I guess started to look for the positives in that. And 30 people are paying attention to something that I said. That doesn't happen for me in my real life. That's something to celebrate. And so she began to focus upon the 30 rather than the nobody, and completely changed it around, and now has, 30,000, because she actually realized there were these individuals there interacting with what she was doing. And it really changed things for her. It was quite
amazing. And isn't that a wonderful example? And that's, you imagine 30 people, if they turned up at your front door, that's a lot of people. You know, you wouldn't fit them in most offices. And that's so valuable. I'm so happy that she did turn that. And would she talk to you? And through the process of talking to you, she sounds like she got there. You know, she got, and that's just so important.
That's right. So one of the other things that's kind of come up in our conversation a little bit there is, you know, I guess it's about looking after yourself. And when you're working for a corporate or an employer, there's systems in place for the employee. There's professional development often, there's annual leave or sick leave or long service leave or maternity leave, all these things to help care for the employee. But when you're working for yourself, it's very easy to not have those systems in place. Most of us probably don't. Do you think there's a case for us to think through things like sick leave and those professional development and those types of things, so things that we can put in place to help us to be more sustainable in the long term with our business?
Oh, well, look, yes, there definitely is. And I think the good news is that we don't have to use terms like sick leave. You know, we can put it in our own language. But I think, you know, it's back to this kind of putting yourself first. And I would say that over the sort of years that we've been in existence, we've seen very, very positive changes in this regard. You know, I remember when we were starting out, so much of the talk were the sort of the battle of businesses, you know, you've got to work harder, mate, you've got to push harder. And I don't see so much of that around these days, thank goodness. And I think a number of people, a large percentage of people are getting this right. But the challenge is to keep it uppermost in our mind. But I think, you know, putting yourself first, again, it's that energy thing. What is going to allow you to be the best possible you? Is it going to yoga 3 times a week? Is it starting the day off with a walk? Is it catching up with a friend? These are the kind of things that should be in our diaries before anything else. before any client meetings or any of those things, you know, put in the things that make you you. That's the single most important thing, I think, is giving yourself the chance to be your best self. And it's that, you know, Dalai Lama sort of quote again. So I think that's kind of where it starts. I think with paid holiday leave, I mean, I certainly strongly advocate that we should always have something in our diaries that we can look forward to. So with, I mean, again, my darling wife, Jane, is very good at putting things in my diaries, but we make sure that we've got some bit of fun always planned with us. You know, a lot of our sort of availability is determined by school holidays. So every school holidays, we make sure we do something. We go away somewhere, we do something. But regardless of whether it's school holidays or not, I think having something planned in your diary, maybe it's once a month, maybe it's once a fortnight, maybe it's once every 3 months. But what we shouldn't do is get to the point where we get to an end of a year and go, oh, I didn't have any holiday. You know, I just don't think that's the right way to be. The other thing I think is that, and perhaps a slight sounds like a bit of a contradiction to that, is that, you know, balance isn't something that you do at the weekends. You know, that's not how it should be when you're running your own business. Balance should be within every day. So doing something every day that is for you and that is for your mental and physical well-being, just so important. So I think it's not work like a dog Monday to Friday and then, you know, lie on the sofa all weekend. It's plan it in your day, make it a part of your day, you know. And the professional development thing, I would say with that, again, we've got so much access to tools. You know, you go onto Udemy or Coursera or any of these places, anything that you want to upskill in, my goodness, you can just do it immediately, you know, and you can do it also at local unis. And, you know, there are lots of organizations that exist doing very low cost professional development. And what I think we should do is, as solo business owners, is give ourselves a professional development budget and spend it. Make sure we spend it, because just going to something, you know, when I was talking about that cognitive behavior therapy, the reason I did that was I did a 4-day course by, I can't remember that lady's name, Eleanor Shakapa, I think it was, in Sydney, part of Sydney Uni. It was brilliant. I didn't know what I was really doing, but it looked interesting. I did it for, I think, 3 afternoons, met a fabulously interesting group of people, cost me not much money, you know, so give yourself a professional development budget and spend it. You know, don't get to the end of the year without spending it.
You're listening to Pro Blogger.
That's great. It's, I love those tips of, you know, something to look forward to, and that's something we're obsessed by our holidays and spend way too much time thinking about our next holiday. But I think that helps my mental health to know that there's something coming and there's something exciting. But like you say, in the each day there needs to be something to look forward to as well. And for me, that's, you know, my walk, my podcast listening, and in the middle of the day, I give myself 45 minutes just to listen to something fun, and that sort of drives me through the morning. And then it's probably watching something on Netflix in the evening. So
yeah, well, I've set up a day recently. I'm based in Sydney, and I've got all sort of found this wonderful day trip. I've done it a couple of times, and I'm going to try and do it every 12 weeks. Which is, I get a train from the center of Sydney, which goes to Kiama down on the south coast. It's about 2.5 hours, lovely journey. I walk from Kiama to Gerringong, which is about 20 kilometers there and back. A lovely coastland walk, and I get the train home again. So I leave at 7:30 in the morning, get home 7:30 at night. And I walk and I sit and I listen, I take podcasts, I take notebooks. Oh, what a fantastic, it's a day out. You know, it's a day, and I've, you know, as I scurry off to the railway station at sort of 7:30 in the mornings, it just feels so wonderful, you know, and you can do so much when you're staring out the window of a train or walking along a coastal walk. You know, it's one day. It costs me, you know, next to nothing. It's so cheap. It's just a beautiful way to spend a day.
It's interesting that you, as someone who, you know, I guess works alone a lot, spends, you know, that time alone when you're not working as well. Are you an introvert?
No, not at all, actually. But I love solitude. And actually, there's a wonderful show on the ABC recently about the distinction between solitude and loneliness. I love solitude. And I just think it's so important, well, for me anyway, and I know it is happily for my wife. My wife's an artist, and she has time where she just wants to be by herself and paint. And I know our teenage child certainly has plenty of time when he wants to be on his own. So I just think solitude is a wonderful thing. So, yes, I do choose to be myself, by myself, and I make sure I have a good, you know, good block of it each and every day, quite honestly. But, you know, I spend the rest of the time surrounded by 100,000 Flying Solo members. So it's not like I'm, you know, I don't love, you know, I love communing as well.
Yeah. Well, I guess that brings me to my final kind of question is, it was around loneliness. And I asked in our Facebook group the other day if anyone had any questions for you. And there was a number of people who just reported feeling lonely, and I can see them connecting with our community, which is, I guess, one way to tackle that. But do you have any other thoughts on those who do struggle with that aspect of being a solo entrepreneur?
Yeah, well, look, it's a very important one, and I think, you know, loneliness can really eat away at you, and it just shouldn't. And I think that there's a distinction between kind of working by yourself and just really feeling like you're alone. And I think, you know, you mentioned your own community at ProBlogger, and clearly, you know, we have a community at Flying Solo. These days, there's no excuse, but that doesn't sound very nice to somebody who's struggling with loneliness. But there are so many ways that we can connect, and we should. And I think that one of the key things is just having the courage to get away from your desk and going into the world. So if you're one of those people who tends to fall back a lot on sort of online communication, well, maybe take a shift from that and actually arrange to go and meet people instead of just hooking up with them online. Now, it might not sound like it's so sensible in terms of time usage, but what it gives you in terms of connection, I just think is so much greater. I mean, I personally love to go and work in a public library. I have an office at home, I have an office in town, but I still will go and work in our public library. Often if I'm writing, if I'm doing a lot of writing, having other people around me that are studious with their head down really helps me. So I think little tricks like that, just connecting by seeing other people, you know, living their lives, maybe going and doing work in a co-working space for a couple of hours, go and sit in a cafe. I mean, really, libraries are just so wonderful. We can use those. I think buddying up with people is very good. If you just have two or three people, close colleagues, perhaps in a little Facebook group, and just check in with each other. You know, all these things, we use Slack as our kind of communication tool in Flying Solo, which works superbly for us. You know, there's eight of us. We're all dotted around different parts of the country, all different time zones, working different days, working different hours. But that's one place where we just kind of come together. And those little tools, if we make use of those, can really keep us connected. You know, again, our forums at Flying Solo, lots of people pop in there, and it never ceases to amaze me how supportive people are of other people. It's our natural human sort of instinct to offer support to other people. So we should just use that. You know, if you've got something on your mind, something you're worrying about, something that you're not sure about, then just ask. You'll be amazed what you get back. You know, meetup groups, another great place to go to just to stay connected with people. I just, yeah, it's connection is the answer.
That's right. You've mentioned a couple of tools that you use, Slack being one. We use Slack as well. Do you have any other tools or apps that you use, not just for connection with others, but any aspect of being a solo operator?
Yeah, well, actually, there's a couple. I mean, to me, I use one little one, which you've probably heard of, called Coffertivity, which is a little app. I think it's available for Mac and Android, and it's just the noise of a kind of a cafe. It sounds a bit weird, but it's just a little app, and if I play it, I won't do it now. It'll probably make all sorts of weird noises, but it just gives you the noise of a lively cafe. You can't hear anything, any particular voices distinctly, but it just gives you the impression that you're in a bustling place. Now, surprisingly, that really works. It really does. So I personally use that. I use music a great deal, so I have kind of music playing around me all the time. I personally don't have any vocals. I find those distracting, but other music I certainly listen to. I make sure that regardless of whether it's one of my walking sort of periods or not, that I'm outside quite regularly. So I stay and see kind of people around me as often as I can. I use podcasts, and not just business podcasts. In fact, less and less do I listen to business podcasts. I listen to podcasts that either entertain me, so just, you know, humor, or that are leading me in areas that I maybe just don't know anything about. You know, I find those so good. Another little thing that I do I know a number of my colleagues still think is a bit weird. Whenever I travel anywhere, if I'm going through an airport, I'll always buy a magazine about something on a topic that I know nothing about. So the time before last, it was a whole thing on graffiti. It was a magazine about graffiti and street art. So I just bought that, didn't really understand it. You know, not before I read it, wasn't sure whether do I like graffiti or don't I. You know, when I go to Melbourne, I love it. But a lot of the stuff I see around here is, you know, just kind of tagging and messy. But so I buy magazines on topics that I don't know, and I read them. And my gosh, that opens up just new ways of thinking. I'm not sure whether it necessarily helps me with sort of the loneliness side of things, but it gives me an understanding of people in different ways that I kind of didn't have before. So I just think that's a large part of it, is, you know, being open to new ways of doing things, new ideas, getting out from our own little bubble. You know, part of the joy of a solo business is it is our own little bubble, but there's a danger in there also. And a final thing I'd just say is that another quote that I often repeat in my head is the one from the British philosopher Bertrand Russell, which is, the time you enjoy wasting is not wasted time. And I use that as my excuse. You know, if I've got a bit of a thing about chairs, I buy and sell and collect particular chairs. And so that's what I repeat to myself. The time I'm enjoying wasting is not wasted time. And it's, you know, my wife calls it chair porn, but it's me just sitting there looking at particular chairs, models of chairs, and I love doing it. And that to me just reminds me of, gosh, aren't I lucky to be working by myself, that I can spend 10 minutes today doing something that I just love and no one's going to tell me off.
That's great. I love it. I feel like we've just skimmed the surface today, even though we have covered a lot of ground. There's so much that solo entrepreneurs face, and I know there'd be many in our audience who'd like to dig a little bit deeper with you, and I guess they can check out Flying Solo. But I love what you've launched in the last month, Soloism.
Yes.
I wonder whether you can just give us a really brief introduction to Soloism, because I think it, as I look at it, it is a perfect fit for so many pro blogger readers.
Yeah, well, look, there's one point that I meant to mention before when you talk about sort of being able to focus and concentrate on your priorities. For the whole of last year, my password on my computer was the best work ever. So I had to type that in laboriously. My computer's set to go to sleep every 10 minutes or something. So for probably 10 times a day, for every day last year and a bit of the year before, I was having to type in the best work ever. And that is a wonderful way also to kind of keep a theme going and keep you focused. But that the purpose of that for last year was I was writing this course, which we now have at soloism.com. So the reason we've done it on this different domain is that Flying Solo is very much an Australian business community. With Soloism, we're taking kind of what we've learned for nearly 20 years into the world. And Soloism is basically a course that steps through, I think we've got 82 videos that will go through every aspect of building, designing, growing, enjoying a solo business. So we've really kind of pulled it apart. I've written it all. I've recorded all the videos. And I do believe it's the kind of thing I wish I had kind of when I started. It's kind of all we know. You know, we've observed a lot of solo businesses doing a lot of things, and it's kind of everything we know in one spot. And the idea is that if you've got a query about how to charge more or how to work more productively or how to market with you know, a little bit more power, how to use words more strongly, you know, everything's there, and it's kind of lifetime access. So yeah, that's that's the, we call it work your way, which is very much the kind of the sentiment of, I think, of a solo business. So yeah, look, it's totally made for people like you, me, and your listeners. So I really hope they will have a look at it and might like it.
Yeah, I love it. It's your tagline, complete guide to going it alone in business. And when I thought, I always see the complete guide and think, there's nothing that's complete. But as I looked over the outline, you've got 26 sections and 106 modules covering pretty much anything I could think of that I'd want to know on this particular topic. So, and you very generously, given 20% off for ProBlogger readers.
Totally.
Yeah, and we'll link to, we've got a link in our show notes at ProBlogger.com/podcast/181. And we'll have the link that automatically gives you that 20% off for the next 2 months from when this show goes live. So thank you very much from my audience to you for doing that.
It's a total pleasure. And I really hope that I'll get to meet some of them. If anybody's got any questions for me about anything whatsoever, just send me an email, robert@flyingsolo.com.au. I'm happy to talk to anybody about any issues of their solo business.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for being so generous with your time. Is there anywhere else that our audience can connect with you further?
I think that's about it. Look, I would just say don't spend any more time thinking about me. Just go for a walk.
Yeah, perfect. And another podcast or two while you do it.
Yes, absolutely right.
That's great. Thanks so much, Robert. Really have enjoyed speaking with you today, and thank you from the ProBlogger audience to you.
Thank you so much.
This is ProBlogger.
I hope you found that interview to be useful and hopefully a bit inspiring as well. You know, being a solo entrepreneur is something that I have loved for years. I really have loved it. It's brought a lot of freedom to my life, which I'm incredibly grateful for. But it has come with some real challenges and some real costs at times as well. And we have to work through those challenges that we talked about today. And so I hope you found this interview to have come at a good time for your own journey. I've been amazed, actually, over the last few weeks, the amount of people who've said, "Are you reading my mind?" These episodes just keep coming at the right time. So I hope today's was one of those. You can find the full transcript of today's show notes as well as a little bit of further listening and reading over at ProBlogger.com/podcast/181. And if you are listening for something else to listen to, a couple of suggestions for you. The last couple of episodes have had some really good feedback. In 179, we talked about how to reduce your bounce rate, gave some tactics to do that. And I've been really pleased to see some of you reporting how you have implemented some of those tactics. And in episode 180, we talked about using Facebook Live. And again, in the Facebook group, we have seen a number of you sharing some of those Facebook Lives that you've done. Well done for those of you who have. And I've also, as you were listening today, if you were challenged by what Robert was talking about in terms of looking after yourself, because if you want your business to thrive, you need to look after you, or else your business is not going to be sustainable. You might want to check out episode 38, in which I share about how I came to this same lesson myself. I realized that I had not been looking after me. And as a result, my business was suffering. And so I talk in that episode about how I got my health back on track and actually give you the things that I did to get my diet and exercise back together, some of my mental health and some other areas of my life back on track as well. That was my most commented upon episode ever. That's episode 38. If you want to go back and listen to that, you'll find it in iTunes or over at ProBlogger.com/podcast/38. Okay, it was a long one today. Thanks for listening to the end. I do appreciate it, and I really look forward to connecting with you next week in episode 182. Have a great week.
You've been listening to ProBlogger. If you'd like to comment on any of today's topics or subscribe to the series, find us at ProBlogger.com/podcast. Tweet us at ProBlogger. Find us at Facebook.com/ProBlogger or search ProBlogger on iTunes.
This episode of the ProBlogger podcast was edited by the team at Podcast Motor, who offer a great range of services, including helping you to set up and launch your podcast, as well as ongoing editing and production of the podcast that you produce. You can check them out at podcastmotor.com.